Accession number 18345, Reel 1.
Bill Green, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Lancashire, in Rainford, which is a little village just outside St Helens.
Which year was this?
The year was 1921, in the February.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Rainford?
I went to the village school when I was five, but I was taken out of the school and sent to Prescott Grammar School at the age of eight.
It so was
at the age of eight.
Why
yes.
was that?
I don't know. My parents thought that I could progress a lot quicker and use my potential. They thought they saw something in me and decided to give me a head start. And Prescott was approximately 7 miles away, so I used to have to go by train from Rainford station.
How old were you when you left school?
I left school when I was 14. Due to the Depression, my parents had a farm, and they found it increasingly difficult to sell their produce at a commercial price. And after two or three years in a doldrums situation, they decided to sell up and try something different. And it's a long story, really, but my father was wounded on the Somme in 1916 and was sent via the advanced dressing station to England and onto Southmead Hospital, where during his months convalescing, he rather fell in love with the city and always said that had he got to try a different area, he would come to Bristol and try his luck there.
So what job did you take on?
Well, I continued schooling, but in a commercial school. There was plenty of jobs available in Bristol. It had not had the same, the recession had the same effects as it had up in the north. And there was full employment in the clerical sections. So I went to this commercial college where I stayed for 18 months and learned shorthand, typing, bookkeeping, and the usual commercial procedures. And at the age of just turned 16, I got a job with the Bristol Aeroplane Company Engines Division at Patchway in Bristol, where I stayed until the beginning of the war.
Did you join the TA before the war?
I did. I joined the TA on the 1st of May 1939.
Why was that?
Well, I felt that with the militia being called up at the age of 20, and I was just turned 18, I thought I would rather like to choose my regiment sooner than have it chosen for me. And although I was not a very practical, mechanical type of person, joining the Royal Tank Regiment seemed to be the best option. Although, slightly before then, I rather fancied my chance with the Air Force, and I'd actually applied to join the Royal Air Force only in the Volunteer Reserve station, which was situated across the airfield from where I was working. having not heard from them from the time I tried to join there in the October or November of 1938, I got fed up with waiting and trotted up and joined the Royal Tank Regiment.
Which unit of the Royal Tank Regiment did you join?
Well, the regiment was the 44th Royal Tank Regiment. It had been converted from the 6th Gloucesters Territorial Regiment in the previous October. So it was still in its embryonic state. It was denuded of equipment, but basically the regiment was there, but the equipment wasn't. However, we shared whatever vehicles there were available, and the machine guns and wireless sets, and just got on with trying to learn basically what we could. We went to camp in the August of 1939, and we went to Luggershaw, which was a village very, very near Perham Down, where we had a regular battalion of the Royal Tank Regiment stationed, and of course we were able to use their equipment for the 2 weeks that we were there, and we came on in leaps and bounds. We certainly knew an awful lot more about life in tanks at the end of the fortnight than we had when we went.
What was your reaction when you heard the news that Chamberlain had declared war on Germany?
I believe that most of us had a good idea that it would happen sooner or later. Although we were virtually in the age group of 18 to 21, we had more or less kept up with the wireless, as we used to call it in those days, and followed the peace in our time return from Munich, and viewed it with skepticism. And I don't think it surprised us one little bit that inevitably we would go to war. The reason that it was Poland, it didn't seem to matter. It was taking in our stride, sort of thing.
And what happened to you after the war declaration?
It was a rather a fiasco, really. I think that we were embodied on the 1st of September. We were called to the colours, as it is called, on the 1st of September, and nobody was prepared for the huge influx of young men landing at the drill hall in Old Market Street. And after being checked and signed in, sort of thing, we were told we could go home again and report the following day, which we did, and were allotted billets in the drill hall, various halls and church buildings in the Old Market area where the drill hall was situated, and we slept away from our homes on the 2nd of September, while they tried to sort out some sort of program for us. Of course, the following day war was declared, which we had rather been expecting.
And then?
We stayed there for a few days, and while preparations were going on to split the different squadrons into outlying districts, The vast majority of the 44th went to Ashton Court, which was Lady Smythe's estate, and we went under canvas. The officers went into the house itself. They were billeted in the house itself, and in time some of the troops went into the various rooms as they were made available as winter was approaching. Another squadron went to Burr Walls, which was a large house on the Phelan side of the suspension bridge, and took over that house. It was large enough to accommodate the whole squadron, and in some garages nearby, the fitter staff set up their workshops, and that continued right throughout the winter of 1939-40, which was a very, very bad winter.
How did it affect you personally?
Well, I'd had a little try at the Church Lads Brigade. I'd had a little bit of experience of going away to camp when I was 16 and 17. I'd belonged to a local church which had a Church Lads Brigade contingent, and so I was quite used to looking after myself. It was no hardship, and luckily I wasn't very picky and choosy with my food, so I ate quite reasonable, and I felt very, very fit.
Did you expect to go to France?
No, it would have been a waste of time going to France. We would have been just supernumerary luggage, because we were far from trained. It takes approximately, I would say, 9 months crash courses to equip a tank soldier, because not only has he to learn his given trade, or the trade that he takes to easiest, but he's also got to be conversant with the other two skills necessary in the tank. I was a driver, and I also had to learn the rudiments of working the 19 set, the tank radio set, and also to be proficient in the 2-pounder and the 7.92 Beezer machine gun, just in case I had to be co-opted at any time to do something other than my trade.
Did new equipment come?
Yes. The War Office had us guarding the docks at Avonmouth right through that winter. We took it in squadron turns, each doing about 3 weeks duties down in Avonmouth, and I think this was only because they had really no equipment to train us with. We'd already done our quota of square bashing, and were considered to be quite proficient soldiers. We looked a little bit more military than we had when we were embodied. And I think they just got us out of the way for those few months, because I don't think the docks were under any threat. However, we moved from our various billets. Oh, I forgot to mention that one squadron was C Squadron, was later given a house just on the edge of the Downs. So it was a squadron at Ashton Court, one at Burr Walls, and one on the edge of the Downs. However, in the late April or early May, we entrained to Salisbury Plain again, and we went to West Lavington, and also under tents. And there we received our full complement of the Mark II infantry tank, which was called the Matilda. And we then got what they call now hands-on experience with our vehicles. And we learned very, very quickly by sheer experience of being in them daily. And I think that by the time we left the Salisbury Plain area to man the defences in the Surrey area, Redhill, Reigate, Dorman's Land, Lingfield, because of the threat of the possible invasion, the Operation Sea Lion that everybody was talking about, that we would have given a fairly good account of ourselves. We were young, we were brash, we were... I don't think we realised the implications all that much, but we were certainly very willing and fairly good at our job, we thought.
Did you expect the Germans to invade yourself?
No, I strangely enough, I always thought that the logistics of an invasion in those days, I realised how hard it had been to get our fellas off the beaches and jetties from all the various places other than Dunkirk. And even as a very naive young man, I thought of all the shipping and stuff that was necessary there. And of course, I had great faith in the British Navy. So I didn't think for one minute that it was a possibility.
Was there any question in your mind after the fall of France that the fight should be continued against Germany?
Oh, more than ever.
Did you listen to Chamberlain's broadcasts?
Which one were you thinking of? The Peace in Our Time before the war started, or
no,
Churchill's?
Sorry, yeah, Churchill's broadcast.
Yes, I did. He always inspired me, Churchill, with his speeches. I thought, well, here's a man who's done it before. He's a strong personality. I had nothing against Chamberlain, except I thought he was rather a very weak politician to handle a crisis before the war started. I thought he was the wrong man in the wrong job at that time. But I'd also heard that Churchill was described even in those days as a warmonger. And in my naivety, I thought, well, this was the right man for the job, and he inspired us, I believe.
Did you listen to Lord Haw Haw?
No, I didn't. I'd heard people that did, and I somehow didn't give him much credence, really. I never had any time for turncoats, ever. So I suppose that was the reason I didn't.
Any incidents that happened to you whilst you were there in East Surrey?
No, not really. We watched the... of course, we had a grandstand view of the Battle of Britain, and a lot of our time was spent... In rather a very light-hearted mood, chasing after the parachutists coming down, hoping that we'd bag a German. The only two that I was party to rescuing, one was a Pole and one was a British pilot, but some of the others must have naturally found a German, because there was enough coming down at that time. This would be, of course, the September, end of August, September, October time of 1940, when it was fairly well at its height.
How would you have treated them if they'd have been Germans?
Well, just stuck them in the back of the lorry, stuck a pistol towards them and taken them back to HQ. Had a feeling that he was just doing his job as we were doing ours.
What happened to you next?
One morning we were called on. We'd just done an exercise with the Canadian division. It was, I think, our first real big exercise with infantry. And, of course, that was our main function. And we did several of these exercises with the Canadian regiments, and got to appreciate how different it is simulating a war condition than it was sort of going from place to place on the tarmac roads. And we'd come back to our various places. I was stationed in Redhill, and there was a parade call for, and we attended, and we were brought to attention, and my squadron leader got up and started to speak about he wanted some volunteers for the Middle East, and he wanted so many driver mechs, so many wireless ops, so many gunner mechs. And at that time I was still very adventurous, and we had sent various chaps to the Middle East previous to that, but they were mainly tradesmen, like electricians and fitters, and there was a great dearth of them in the Middle East. So they'd gone on before us and left the battalion, and I don't know what happened that day. I stuck my hand up, and so did the vast majority. And a couple of days later, I looked on the notice board, the part two orders, and I'd been selected as a waiting man. In other words, I wasn't on the draft. There were 21 going from the 44th, and I was the 22nd. I was the waiting man in case anybody didn't turn up. And that is exactly what happened. One of our members, a corporal, an Irish fellow by the name of Hurley, he just didn't come back from leave. We were given a week's embarkation leave, which I spent at home for a few days. Went up to see my relatives up in Rainford and St Helens and Knowsley, and came back in time to get back to the 44th, only to be told that Hurley hadn't turned up and that I was officially now one of the driver mechs going to wherever. And we didn't know where.
So when did you go?
The next day. We were trained up to Liverpool, where we boarded the SS Louis Pasteur, which we found was a French liner that had been taken under our protection when France fell. And it had been converted to be used as a troop ship. And I think we were on there for approximately 24 hours, possibly 36 hours. We sailed up to Greenock and picked up the rest of the convoy. And I would have thought that half the Atlantic and North Sea fleet was in that convoy. I've never seen such a gathering of warships, cruisers, aircraft carriers, destroyers, you name it, they were there. And And off we went. And took 6 to 7 days before we got to Gibraltar. They told us that they were going to steer straight out into the Atlantic and then come back on a reciprocal leg to get to Gibraltar. In other words, not to creep down the French coast and the Bay of Biscay. So we got down to Gibraltar, where we were disembarked, and wondered why on earth we'd been disembarked at Gibraltar. The same day we were ordered to get into lighters, which were moored at the harbour side, and we got down into the lighters, and we were carrying, from memory, a large pack, a small pack, water bottle, gas mask. I don't think we had small arms. I'm not sure about that. And we set off in these lighters, and about a quarter of an hour later, we pulled up at the side of a destroyer. And the destroyer had thrown scrambling nets over the side. So we clambered up these scrambling nets and boarded HMS Greyhound. And we noticed that there were other lighters pulling up at the side of other destroyers. I can remember the Griffin was one, the Gallant was another, and one was one of the F classes. I can't quite remember, but all the tank personnel seemed to be on the Greyhound. And the same evening, we set off and made a dash through the Med. And of course, we'd been told by other sources that nearly all the troops for the Middle East were going round the Cape by the end of 1940. And so it was quite a surprise to be setting off across the Med. The bit that we didn't know was that we were going to Malta. And that rather surprised us, because we had no idea that there was going to be a tank force on Malta. But sure enough, when we got through to Malta without any incident, and we got into the Grand Harbour and disembarked, and we marched up from the Grand Harbour through Floriana to some quarters in Birchicara, where we were put into an ice cream factory that had been converted into a temporary barracks. And then we had a little bit of a recap the next day, because there were an awful lot of faces that we didn't know. And it seemed that the unit which was designated number one independent troop Royal Tank Regiment was made up of contingents from three RTR battalions. There were the 21 from the 44th.